Hey everyone, welcome to Myopia Defender Childhood this week. If you're listening to this now, thank you, because that means you're a Patreon supporter for the Dude Letter, Here Be Tigers, Nerdly, Geekly, whatever podcast, Geekly Oddcast, and Otter Worlds Patreon. So thanks. At the moment, of course, you might have questions as to what we're talking about and what we're doing. Well, first, this is Hellraiser. I had to watch it because you guys voted for it, and I don't know whether to thank you or not, but I don't know why Daniel and Matt were so excited to listen to it, or watch it, I guess. But here we are, and I have thoughts. Next, if you're listening to this when it comes out here, we don't know what November is going to be yet, because at the moment, until Halloween, the polls are still going on to the Action Hero Month. So, you know, if you have it, get it. It's going to be great. With that in mind, though, please participate. We will do an entire month on whoever you choose. And by the next time you hear this or see it in your feed, that will be resolved. So thanks for your support, and thanks, guys.
Myopia defend your nightmares. This week we did Hellraiser because apparently you don't like us. Although this is Daniel and Matt's pick, so I was hoping to do a wholesome movie like Chucky. Or what else was on that list? Saw.
Oh, that Saw. I do not like torture porn.
Are you kidding me? How is this any better than Saw? In what way?
Point of order, it is better than Saw, but it is still kind of torture porn.
It is not better than Saw. That one had Carrie Elwes and Danny Glover. Danny Glover gets hit by 12 shotgun shells at once, if I recall.
He gets his throat slit. I don't know.
Was he not killed in the house? No, his buddies were killed in that house of horrors.
Saw is a serial killer movie. This is a supernatural horror movie.
We could have done Chucky. Shame on all of you. But we did Hellraiser, so let's talk about this.
Well, I mean, Chucky did end up on Rugrats, so he's fine. Don't worry about Chucky. Yeah.
Someday Angelica is going to push him too far and then stabby, stabby, stabby.
Yeah, right. Anyway, so this is Clive Barker's Hellraiser, 1987. And I say Clive Barker's because that's literally how it's titled in mine. I don't know if it was titled in the theater that way, but whatever. It's kind of like saying this is Tim Burton's Disney Presents The Nightmare Before Christmas. Anyway, so on panel we have
Steve-O.
Hello, this is Daniel, and honestly, I don't have a joke this week, and I just want to hear what Matt has to say in terms of a pinhead joke.
I'm Matthew W. Quinn, demon to some, angel to others.
There we go.
Nicely done, Matt.
And, oh, I forgot. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of My Open Defended Childhood and Riffer on Cineprov, and come see us when we riff Snow Beast on November 7th. For two reasons. First, it was my audition piece, so it was good enough to get me in the troupe. It's good enough for you, and my in-laws will be there, so you have to convince them I'm funny.
Oh, yeah, I remember when you were reviewing that at first, saying, I'm going to audition. Here's what I got to audition to.
You helped me.
Yeah, you mentioned that in the past, Snow Beast.
Snow Beast is awful, and again, I have family coming to see me try to be funny for the first time. I don't know if they believe that I will be, so you need to come.
It's going to be great. Have six beers and cheer until you're hoarse.
Yeah, right? Yeah, do it, please.
Or else.
Yeah.
I'll do a favor for you, Nick. I will look up the characters' ages before the movie starts. That way you'll have some material.
Oh, that was the best last time. And if you didn't see us do Terminator, you missed out. It was a good show.
It was.
Anyway, because Matt loves this movie so much, will you give us a plot synopsis, buddy?
Okay, we start out with a sleaze bag named Frank Cotton in Morocco buying a mysterious evil Rubik's Cube from a mysterious person. He takes it back to what may be England or maybe New England or New York somewhere. It's not 100% clear.
It might have been London. It might have been Jersey.
And he solves the box that's supposed to open the gateway to unlimited pleasures beyond human comprehension. And a bunch of hooks come out and rip him apart. And there's chains everywhere. And there's the leather god Pinhead and his minions.
Matt, why are your pants off?
Yeah, right.
It's funny, Dan. I thought that was your thing.
I have so many lubricants to show you.
Lubricant? Wouldn't that defeat the whole purpose?
It's a movie, Matt. It's all high fantasy. Although I will argue that Frank looks moist throughout this entire movie. He's dripping.
Well, that's because he has no skin.
Is he dripping more before or after he has no skin?
Well, he's sitting in a square, not a circle, of candles with his shirt off.
Not a pentagram, a square. The evilest shape of all, a square.
If I can jump in and just finish up the plot. Frank gets torn apart by the Cenobites. He comes back to life because his brother moves into their childhood home with his relatively new wife, Julia, and bleeds on the attic floor. He comes back. He convinces Julia to help him raise victims. Meanwhile, Frank's niece, Larry's daughter, Kirsty, and we're going to be mispronouncing that, I'm sure, throughout this entire episode, realizes something's up and is trying to figure out what's going on, and discovers that Frank's back to life, and she needs to stop him, and then the Cenobites get involved somehow.
His homegirl got so bored, she decided to play with the evil Rubik's Cube and ended up summoning the leather gods.
This movie is just a shit show, guys. Well,
summoning the leather gods, is that the name of your debut album there, Matt?
It's just yeah, I can start heavy metal yelling into the microphone if you like.
No,
let
thank
me take
you.
My headphones off.
Nah, not now.
Here's the thing about this movie, other than it's terrible. It's also terrible. Matt Groening's rule of cartooning is perfect here, which is you should be able to tell a cartoon by its silhouette. And frankly, Friday the 13th, we didn't get that. We don't get the Jason. We don't get Jason from Jason from the third one with the hockey mask and everything. Or Mike Myers with the beautiful mask. Is there right away Freddy Krueger with the... Well, I mean, Slenderman Freddy Krueger is how we started, right?
Right.
This, you get some incredible silhouettes. Pinhead, Chubsy, Vagina Neck...
The Chatterer.
Yeah, that's right.
The clicky, clicky mouth.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those like Joker toys from the Batman Arkham Asylum games. Those are some cool characters. They're only in the movie, though, for about 90 seconds total.
Yeah, as we discussed in the movie, a lot of this is like a family drama or even a Lifetime original movie, just with more sadomasochists from beyond the grave than usual.
I read the Roger Ebert review. I'm not going to dignify it here because it's not worth it. But it made me think this would be a better two-hander for a Grindhouse-style movie, where you have a 45-minute movie where you take out a lot of the weird, like, well, she's going to go to a bar for a third time and pick up a weird businessman to murder.
Like sands of the hourglass, so too are the chains of your life.
Where'd that come from?
That was fucking great. Cenobite Hospital.
Emphasis
I'm
on...
sorry, Mary, she's not going to make it. Would you like me to... live deliciously inside of you.
Well, you did say chains.
Did you know that I'm secretly your father and I faked my death and I've been sleeping with your sister, which makes this a whole thing?
By the way, if your uncle ever says come to daddy and grabs your tit, run. Yeah. Don't stay in the same room. Kirsty, this is on you. Or, I almost said Kirsty.
Or don't watch while he's dismembered alive by chains.
No. I bet you that for her is catharsis, and that's what Clive Barker was thinking. He's like, yeah, he touched me. Let's watch him split apart.
So much of this movie, and I'll go ahead and spoil this for you, Nick, and you can throw shit at me later, is like that episode in the new season of Big Mouth with Jason gaining mastery over his jizz and changing it into different shapes. That's pretty much what Clive Barker was thinking of.
Gross. Hey.
Hey. Excuse me, Jay, not Jason. Jason Manzoukas is the guy who does the voice, but yeah. You get the point.
But, I mean, this movie...
But can we defend Evolving Jizz here for a minute? Can we just... Because the practical effects in this film are very... The only redeeming quality in my mind.
Like when Frank is resurrected from the floor.
Oh!
I thought he was going to be a crazy spider skeleton.
Yeah.
Which would have been sweet. But let's be real. Like, that scene was cool. It was a little drawn out. But yeah. The practical effects were really fun.
Personally, that's why I liked the movie when I first saw it, is because of the atmosphere and the practical effects.
Yeah, I mean, this movie gets to be tightened up a little bit, and it'd probably been a lot better.
And Matt, you droned on about, you know, like, boy, I thought this movie wasn't, the cadence was a lot better.
Yeah, because I saw this a few years ago, and the cut I saw felt a lot short. Like, I don't remember Steve, not your Steve, and the other Steve, having a physical throwdown with a spider monster at the end.
But you filtered out the 45 minutes of dead air, and you remembered the cool practical effects, and you remembered the enigma of... You know, the monsters, and that's really what makes this film interesting, I think.
Yeah. What cut did you see, Matt, exactly?
The somebody uploaded on YouTube cut.
It was 9 minutes, yeah.
All right.
I don't remember anything missing. I just remember it being shorter.
Whoa. Matt, are you pirating movies? That doesn't seem like you. You're usually the honest one of the four of us.
Goddamn bootleg Hellraiser.
But we also bootlegged Guyver. We bootlegged Danger Island. We bootlegged everything.
Well, that's because they gave up the rights on those. This one we bought. Well, I guess technically we saw it on Hulu. But regardless.
So unless there's some sort of fan edit they didn't label where they just trimmed 30 seconds here and there.
They must have.
Because, it doesn't exist.
Because there's some completely... Like when Kirsty is coming to her father's new house... There's a completely random, like, 2 or 3 minute scene where she's walking along the canal. So, like, the whole scene where Kirsty is walking to her father's house from the hole in the wall she's been living in because she cannot tolerate Julia.
Turns out she was right.
Yeah, that whole scene was 3 or 4 minutes. It could have just been cut.
I don't know. I like the guy from New York showing up and saving the day. I mean, the things that needed to be gone are the scene after scene where Julia keeps picking up men. And it's not, if you want to keep them in, fine. Cut the scenes down, man. That's like 25 minutes of a Lifetime movie I don't need.
You only needed the one scene to get the point of what she's doing.
Well, and
some sort of montage.
Well, and if that first one is the one that Kirsty saw, that's literally all you need.
Yeah.
Right? That saves us half an hour.
That's a good point, because just more meat for Frank.
Well, especially since it doesn't matter, apparently, because Frank ultimately kills his brother or whoever. So
Larry.
Someone kills the brother. Larry. It could be Julia. It could be him. We also don't know why eventually she keeps seducing men because the guy is doing all the work. All you have to do is stab someone. Like, we don't really get the process. And eventually it doesn't matter because he sucks off someone, I guess. Julia.
Phrasing.
No, I did it on purpose. He sucks off Julia and he doesn't heal. So none of it matters.
Now, for those who've never seen this movie, what happens is...
Yeah, thank you, Daniel.
Yeah.
The more blood or the more corpses that Frank gets, the more life force he gets to steal, because when he comes back, he's like a husky corpse sort of figure. And so the more blood he gets, the more reformed he gets.
Basically, he's regenerating from having been devoured, taken into hell. And he regenerates from the floorboards as this human skeleton that gets more and more fleshed out. The more people, Julia, with whom he had an affair / quasi rape sometime in the recent past, brings to him to eat.
Now, we are literally sitting opposite each other. So Dan and Matt are next to each other. Me and Steve are next to each other. And we're, and it's important because Matt and Daniel were the ones who've seen this before. Steve and I are not. So we're literally putting these two on trial right now. And I'm going to call Matt out for bullshit because I think you're quoting Wikipedia. I didn't get any of that from the movie.
I didn't get any of that from
the movie. Right?
I did.
Because you've seen it 6 times and read the Wikipedia. I'm going to argue here, they don't say that. Over and over again, people threaten people to go to hell. And it's just like a warehouse in Jersey. I can't, like...
Sounds like hell to me.
I mean, my point is, when she says, are you demons? He goes, we're demons to some, angels to other. I think they're just fetishists. I don't know what does any of this stuff. None of this makes sense.
It's not clear what they are until the second movie. But the point is, it doesn't matter. That doesn't matter for the movie. They're just the supernatural leather freaks going to take Kirstie to hell with them and do ungodly things to her if you just give them Frank.
But that's my biggest gripe with this film is that they introduce some really cool concepts, but they don't compel me to watch the next film. They leave so many loose ends that I desperately want tied up, but I just don't give a shit by the end of the movie. There's a hobo that turns into a dinosaur and flies off, and I couldn't give a fuck about it.
Yeah, check out my blog, How I Would Have Done Hellraiser, because there are some things that needed fixing in this one that are not that hard to fix.
The hobo?
Like the dragon hobo at the end was completely unnecessary.
The hobo that turns into the last villain from Metroid, you mean?
But like, this would have made an
How awesome. Dare you disrespect Ridley, sir?
This would have made a phenomenal graphic novel, and it would have been very gripping, and some of the concepts were so cool, but they just shit all over him by the end of the film, and it didn't matter anymore. Like, who's Pinhead? I don't even know who Pinhead is.
Captain Elliot Spencer.
It doesn't matter, though.
In the movie.
He's the leader of the demon gang. I don't give a shit who Pinhead is by the end of the movie.
Gripping, like, you say? Would it really hook you in?
Gripping? Yeah. He hooked me in and tore my heart right out. It doesn't matter at the end of this film. There's so many cool scenes in this film that are just strung together by just absolute desolate hallways full of nothing.
We have such substantial plot holes to show you.
Full of nothing. Point of order, sir. That magnificent puppet that's in that hallway chasing Kirstie.
No, that's great. Those are the parts of this film that I really enjoy, right? You've got kind of the Jim Henson experience. You've got the weird, creepy, scorpion mouth dude chasing you through the hallway. But then when you get to the end of the hallway, you have to wait for 20 minutes before you go into the next hallway of intrigue.
And on your point, they fucking escape? Are you kidding me? There should have been two girls, and one of them doesn't make it. And, like, and you know, whatever that was, scorpion dude on a chain gets her and drags her away, right? But my pitch for you, Danny Sudsy, give double his budget. Make it $2.5 million or $2 million, whatever it is. Have him direct the 1989 version of Doom. The Doom movie.
Was Doom a thing back
then?
No,
I don't think so.
Doom came out in 91. So the 1992 version.
Okay.
But you know what I mean? Because like these characters look like the demons, right? You take the Chatterer, make him shirtless, and he's essentially an imp. And instead of all this horse shit that's like literally the Lifetime movie that is most of this movie, have it be a PTSD'd soldier in a hospital bed.
Also known as Jacob's Ladder.
No, because Jacob's Ladder doesn't have a puzzle box and has emotion. This is just a shoot 'em up, right? He fixes a puzzle box, a vagina opens in the wall because apparently Geiger had a thing to do with this. Or Giger, excuse me. And then he wakes up and all the Cenobites are just fucking the demons in this. Can you imagine Clive Barker constructing a caco demon?
It would have been awesome. It just right? Floating meatball caco demons.
That's
like, this
kind of what
great.
Nightbreed was, and it didn't do that well.
Yeah. Who cares? Give him $2 million and make it. That's a movie. This is a Lifetime movie with a gay guy who doesn't know how like heterosexual sex happens. He's thrusting into the side of the bed, and her hips are over his shoulders. This is the weird. This movie has three sex scenes for someone who's never had sex.
They're all irrelevant. They're all three of them.
Oh my God.
The intercut between Frank and Julia going at it and then Larry cutting his hand that spills the blood. I know what he's going for. It just went on for far too long.
And again, this is a man who doesn't know how to A, shoot a movie, which we've established. But B, the sex scene doesn't make sense. After threatening her with a knife, she gets so horned up that she has sex with him. Fine, whatever. I guess this is a rape fantasy. But further on, he's thrusting the side of the bed, which is represented by shaking the whole house, and he's essentially having sex with her navel. It's the weirdest thing. It's just a weird scene.
I think the main point was that they were having sex on her wedding dress on her wedding day.
To his fine. Brother.
Yeah.
Fine. Yes.
Fine.
I get it.
Fine.
All of it is fine. It's exactly fine. But he's not the hero or the villain. It just makes her seem weird.
This is interesting. They gave Julia a character arc. She just starts out as a bored housewife who had a fling with her more charismatic brother.
Sex with her brother-in-law on her wedding day.
Who is married to a very nice but boring man. And it's very hard for her to murder people at first, and it gets easier and easier. And she won't kill Larry, and then suddenly, and eventually, after things get dangerous enough, she will. So she actually has a character arc.
No, she doesn't.
Yeah, she does.
Here's why I disagree with you, Matt. Why does she leave her boring husband?
You mean why doesn't she? No idea.
She always wanted to.
No, but why does she go back to Frank? Because he's a rapist?
No idea.
You need something. Like, if her husband was not boring but abusive, then it's interesting, because then she makes a choice. Here she's just bored. She's not identifiable. She's just a pain in the ass.
Bad boy syndrome. Really severe bad boy syndrome. Well, Frank is a little more satisfying than that, I would think.
I think the point, and they tried to do this in the sequel, which I know doesn't matter for this one.
I haven't seen it.
Fine. This is what they're trying to do. I'm not saying they did it well. Well, she was supposed to become the main villain of this entire franchise. Pinhead wasn't.
Sure. Right.
Her arc in the second one is basically she comes back after being killed in this one, and she's basically the Frank character, who is incredibly sadistic and incredibly evil, basically, in hunting down the people that killed her initially. So she was being set up as the villain, which, again, it doesn't necessarily work for this film. They were trying to build to something.
Well, I mean, so then Clive Owen should have introduced her. but like, if you had, like, the hand coming out, or that, like, last dress, because we see her corpse chained to the bed, if that was the last thing that reached for Kirstie, that's more interesting. Like, she's so evil that now she's a demon. The problem is, she, like, her gripes are so milquetoast. Like, it's 1987. I get it. Women in those kinds of movies are the action heroes by this point, right? Like, we have Linda Hamilton at this point, too, from Terminator. You want to make her evil? Do it. But you need to go either more full psycho, or you need to resurrect her. If she's going to be Jason Voorhees, she better come back two or three times, man. Like, this is just such a mess of a movie.
Well, at least they were building up a mythology in this movie and introducing interesting characters. I mean, looking at the Friday the 13th movie, that's the exact same movie as, like, Sleepaway Camp. That's the exact same movie as Halloween. There's practically nothing to it, and they don't even establish anything about what they were building to in the later sequels. This kind of was, which I know doesn't necessarily help the movie, because we can't watch everything back to back, and honestly, the sequels probably aren't that great either, but at least it's building to something.
You're right, but I think it was building to too many things.
Yeah,
I see this film as a tree of shit, where they had a trunk of intrigue. Someone had a great idea, and they tried to branch it out into too many directions too quickly, and some of those branches were very interesting, and some of them were utter shit. And that's why I think I felt that, like, there's loose ends I want tied up, but I don't care about them enough. There's not enough that's, like, bringing them back to the roots of this. If they just focused on the darkness and the intrigue, maybe it's a better film.
Well, Nick had the right idea by saying maybe have Julia only kill one or two people, not three, just to tighten that up a little bit and have maybe Kirstie catch on earlier. Because the beginning, we get the point that this is not a happy family dynamic, and then the Frank comes back to life. But that the unhappy family stuff takes too much time.
I just kind of wish you'd let the shit tree metaphor kept going. In the massive log in the middle, which we thought would be firm and solid, but instead it branched out.
Oh, it was splattery and gross.
It just left such a mess everywhere.
On the floor and on the walls.
It was bloody and stung. God. So let's talk about
Then we played more like Word Wipe or Sudoku. And then the movie restarted, because there was about 20 minutes there where none of us were paying attention except for Matt's.
Nothing happened. You know,
scrawls.
So we could
which
have solved.
I have lots of scrawls.
We could have learned to solve our own Rubik's Cube in 20 minutes, which I think would have revealed more about the end of the film, which was suddenly that everyone knew what the fuck this cube was and knew how to use it, except for the viewers. I didn't know what the hell this thing was.
It's a puzzle box.
Can any of you elaborate?
Like, it's called the Lament Configuration. It was built by this 18th century French toy maker as a portal to hell.
I mean, cool. None of that's explained.
In the movie, they just says it opens doors.
It opens doors.
And then if you watch 16 more hours of these movies, I guess. Yeah. A toy traipses out and goes, I was the one that was forgotten, Teddy Ruxpin that tells you how to get to hell.
Yeah, man, if you read all the rapey fanfic, it all makes sense. But
Clive Barker's just sweating and goes, and then he stabbed her with a meat hook, and oh my god, if only Command made a hook that you could hang things from the wall and didn't damage the wall.
Oh, a command hook for a person, perhaps.
Can we mention at least how there's some great shot, individual shots?
Yes,
they don't lead up necessarily to anything, but like that scene with the female Cenobite dragging that hook on the wall and the wall starts mm-hmm. bleeding, or that close-up of Frank in silhouette and you can see the juices, for lack of a better word, on his half-formed body and darkness.
There were absolutely some great scenes in this film, and that's why I equated it to a haunted house.
Yeah.
Where you've got a very well-manicured scene, but the kind of navigation between those scenes felt very clunky to me.
The problem is that some people are committing and some people are carnies.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I would have guessed is, and this is an honest assumption, Stephen King and Clive Barker know each other and they were talking to each other, and Stephen said, never let someone else film your movie. And this is a case where someone else should have filmed the movie. Like, if you had a director who knew it. No, I mean, honestly, because the problem is not the ideas. The problem is the execution.
I've seen the sequels, and if you don't like this, you're not going to like them. It's not the director.
Hey, this is as good as it's going to get, folks.
We're at the top of shit mountain, folks. I mean, get off the road now.
You're now an employed reviewer for films, right? Like,
I don't know what I am at this point. I'm
pretty sure you mean Blood Mountain, Steve. I don't remember anything shit in this movie.
That's true.
Well, I've only ever seen the first four anyway, so I can't comment on how
that
it goes
from
there.
8 hours of your life. Six, 7 hours of your life. How are you feeling?
Like Jesus wept?
Yeah.
Do you have any sights to show us?
Nah.
No. I'm keeping that up and all up inside.
Space Mountain, maybe. That's a good sight. Let's check it out.
I do like the stigmata-y kind of imagery. I do like the weird rubber mouth. There's one weird scene where a Cenobite is just arranging pieces of someone's face like they're a puzzle.
Oh, that's right at the beginning when they tear Frank apart.
Yeah.
For the first time.
It's something. Also, what a great cube to just find. Just like a child's like, I found this thing, I'm going to figure it out.
Well, they get into that in the second movie. It is not hands that call us, it is desire.
Gross.
Yeah, no, that is literally
a quote. But that's not true, because she didn't desire sex like that. She just found a thing she was playing with after essentially stealing it from someone who wanted to hold on to it.
We didn't say it made sense. We're just saying
that someone, being her pervy uncle, had no skin.
Yes, but she didn't want to summon them. She had no idea what it was, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Also, why does he hold on to the thing? Do we know?
No idea. We don't. He's very protective of it, though.
Right? Like,
probably
why?
To prevent the Cenobites from finding him.
But wouldn't they find the guy who has the thing that summons them?
You'd think so, right?
That's like a beeper.
Well, it's so nobody else can summon
them. It's like the ring. You put it on and suddenly they can see you. And he's just like, oh, I better hold on to it.
I think you're on to something, but they should say that. And he should say, look, like, that'd be a great line as she's about to throw it. He goes, don't, you'll summon them.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't. I don't know why. We also don't have any explanation who the Cenobites are. But it would be interesting
They're explorers from the furthest reaches of experience. Demons to some, angels to others.
The hell does that mean? That sounds like a guy selling you ecstasy at Bonnaroo.
Yeah, except
do you really want to see what the Black Keys are like, man? Because this will make them interesting.
I think that makes the film more interesting, though. We don't know who they are. I think if you introduce the monsters and you spend too much time painting the context, people get bored.
I would agree with you only if we saw bits of them more. Like, if around a corner you just saw a shadow of a dude with nails in his face.
Would it be better or worse if there was, like, one scene where they're in hell, just or whatever fucking realm they came from?
Hell.
There's a Frank flashback where we see him getting, like, mutilated and stuff.
But you have no context of, like, where are they, where do they come from? And there's some intrigue there, but you're kind of like, what's the context? We don't know.
Yes, I both agree and disagree with both of you. If you're going to do that, do it more. If every shadow looked like the Cenobites, if every time Julia closed her eyes or took a puff on that cigarette, like a long drag happened because she saw what Frank saw, then it's a movie. But here, all you get is a mix. It really does feel at times like a Lifetime movie, made all the worst because you have all these reverse shots which are filmed on a cinematic camera in a better quality film. So then when she's on the street, she's running down like it's about to be a drug PSA, man. Kirstie is running away like she's having a bad trip, and she's swirling, and a dude with a Yankees hat looks down on her on like bad PBS print. And then all of a sudden, a Cenobite is being reformed like Lord Zedd from Power Rangers in like IMAX. I'm sorry, this movie feels like you're having a seizure where you're being jerked between something interesting, something terrible, and then you're dizzy.
We can get the cinematography, but something I noticed is the sound is weird. Like when Frank is resurrected, it gets so loud we had to turn it down. The rest of the time we had to turn it up because we couldn't hear a lot of what was being said. We had to turn the subtitles on. So the sound quality is inconsistent.
You know how sometimes you're opening a Pop-Tart packet and it's filled with KY jelly? That's how half the movie sounds. It's like wet and drippy.
Why, Nick, I didn't know you were into such things. Maybe you should get the puzzle box.
Yeah, right. I have such interesting Pop-Tarts to show you.
God damn it.
All right. Gross. No one should have sex with a Pop-Tart, probably.
It is a new flavor.
Probably.
It is the blood sausage Pop-Tart.
Oh, gross. Can you imagine biting into a Pop-Tart that turns your teeth yellow? In class
it's
right
got
now.
Spices and hooks.
I mean, I teach high schoolers, as some of you know by listening and stalking me. We're watching The Patriot, Roland Emmerich's The Patriot right now.
Whoa. You're judging our taste, and you're showing your class The Patriot?
Well, correct. Because we're trying to show them bad uses of history.
Oh, okay.
We're literally teaching them, like, just because something says it's a historical movie, how do you analyze it for historical reasons? One of the things they do, Heath Ledger apparently played a prank on a girl when she was 11 by filling her tea with ink. And so there's a scene where they have these weird bukkake shots filled with, like, black teeth.
I remember that.
And Heath Ledger smiles at his dad, Mel Gibson. You know, two good Americans played by Australians, and one is a huge racist. I'll let you guess which one. And they're just smiling at each other with black teeth. It's bad enough to go in blackface.
Didn't they sew him in like this giant sack so he and the woman he was courting wouldn't have sex?
And then an American playing a Britishman. No, sorry, Lucius Malfoy burns the family to death.
Oh, good
in
Lord.
In a church. In a church.
Was Jason Isaacs. He plays evil British people so well. One wonders why he wasn't in this one.
Oh my God, can you imagine? Can you imagine if he was this, like, Cenobite's butler? Just shows up with, like, a platter filled with skulls?
Ugh. Yeah, the Cenobites having a butler would have been fantastic.
And it's just, like, and he's, no, can better, we... an intern. If it was, like, a lonely Daniel Craig just like, I brought your blood for you.
So, who is your favorite Cenobite?
Fat guy?
The Morpheus guy? Oh. Yeah, he was great.
You mean Butter?
Yeah.
Butterball.
Is that his real name, Butterball?
That is the character's
official name,
yes.
Licking his lips in every other
the
scene.
The Butterball Cenobite.
He's got fat guy sunglasses on, too. I don't know how else to describe
him. Yeah, there's Pinhead, there's the female Cenobite, there's Butterball, and there's Chatterer, and the monster, I think, is called the Engineer.
Oh, yeah. What a great...
Are we introduced to more in the other films?
Yes. In the other films...
The Banana Splits, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones.
Is there a whole race of them?
There are other Cenobites. Those are the main ones.
Oh, okay. God.
Pinhead has all the best lines because he's the one who really talks.
Sure.
The female Cenobite talks a little. The others don't talk at all.
Yeah, I mean, basically, that's it. You're introduced to other Cenobites in the other sequels because it explains where Cenobites come from, but... Honestly,
it's hell.
Well, the longer it goes on, the lamer it gets.
When a degenerate wicked man and a evil Rubik's Cube love each other very much, get Cenobites.
If you weren't going to make that joke, I was going to. I don't know where it was going to go. I think Henry Cavill appears in the later one. That's all I know because I love how horror movies are the origin stories for a lot of A-listers. But, yeah.
A-listers. This film introduced nobody. Sorry.
Introducing Ashley Lawrence, who, as far as I know, has not done anything else.
No.
Except Hellraiser sequels.
Well, it's so funny. I mean, it's the same way with Friday the 13th.
Yeah, Heather Langenkamp.
Langenkamp, where they introduced her, but, like, John Saxon, man, that is a... he was one Tarantino away from being Samuel L. Jackson, because... And I'm not saying he's the same quality, but he's just one of those guys like Bryan Cranston who's just like, sure, I'll do your movie. John Saxon is a good actor. He'll show up. He'll do your shit. He just never chose the right project. He never ended up in a Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But Heather Langenkamp never was going to. I'm sorry. I love Nightmare on Elm Street, but nah, not going to happen. Ready for final thoughts?
Ready if you are.
Didi?
Sure. Watch a compilation on YouTube. There's cool scenes in this film. Like, there really are some good, you know, effects in this film. There's some cool ideas. It's just not a cohesive film, so I wouldn't recommend watching it, but it's got some cool ideas. Like, if you're into the lore, sure, but otherwise, it's kind of a thumbs 45 degrees down for me.
As opposed to full 90 degrees?
Yeah.
I think the thing that worked for me the most about this, and I already see Nick's eyes glazing over
I'm listening because I don't know what I'm going to say.
One of the things this movie had that Friday the 13th doesn't, that Sleepaway Camp doesn't, that a whole bunch of 80s slasher movies don't, is atmosphere. Especially gothic atmosphere, like the old Universal Monster movies have, because the Cenobites are basically Count Dracula. They're like Bela Lugosi's Dracula. And I think that's what draws me in a lot about this movie, more than it probably should, because of the atmosphere, because of the practical effects. It does build up a lore, and if you ever watch the sequels, I mean, some of them are okay, some of them are really not great. I haven't seen any of them past the fourth one. But I can certainly understand why people are fans of this, and I at least recommend you should check it out and make up your own mind about it. I don't necessarily think it's objectively good, but there's a difference between me thinking something's objectively good and me just liking it. I like plenty of crap that other people don't. That's really what it is. You should watch it and make up your own mind.
Sure.
It's got a lot of good concepts, good imagery, a lot of good scenes. Just needs to be really edited down a good bit more. I mean, they could have probably cut between 10 and 20 minutes of this and it would have been a much tighter, better movie. You know, you've heard me say it as many times, see it once. And as Daniel pointed out, if you like it, great. There's this first sequel, which we have Kirstie again. Then we have two more theatrical sequels and then a bunch of direct-to-video crap that I wouldn't recommend on principle. But at least give this a try and make sure you haven't eaten anything first.
I started off by saying I didn't know what to say. I don't know if I do even now. It's funny because a year later, Beetlejuice comes out, and this feels a lot in some ways like Beetlejuice, someone accidentally summoning demons. The comedy element of Beetlejuice saves it because it's equally creepy of an idea. Like, there's even down to the weird rape marriage thing at the end between a 16-year-old and a very old ancient demon type.
Pinhead wouldn't even go for something so bougie as marriage. He just want to get the hooks in right away.
But that's the problem with this. This movie doesn't explain anything. I agree with Steve, though. The ideas aren't bad. It's just that this movie feels like Clive Barker had scenes in mind and then strung it together with what feels like a weird domestic drama that doesn't have any point. I will agree with Daniel that Friday the 13th especially is weak on the movie part. This feels more like it has a movie idea. The problem is that the direction is just garbage. I'm sorry, I know what you're saying, but this movie has a director in the same way that when I'm driving home from work, traffic has a point.
Well, we do live in Atlanta.
Also, my point. Hellraiser as a concept is interesting, but there's no hell and there's no raising. It seems like someone stumbled across an interesting moment and then they decided to change the channel and then click back when they thought something interesting was going to happen.
The original, one of the original titles they came up with was Sadomasochist from Beyond the Grave.
That's even worse. That's an Ed Wood title.
Yeah, that's a problem. That would tell you what this movie actually is a lot better, but it's also too long.
You're worried about the length of the title. That's what you object to that.
Yeah. It wouldn't even fit on the VHS. It's way too long.
Yeah, you gotta parse that. The font gets smaller. I mean, for lack of my Silent Bob ending, which was the first 100 episodes, I'm just going to say, of these, this didn't interest me. And this has a tragic undertone of being like one you can't even throw on at a Halloween party because it goes from being too boring to being too gross. At least with a Michael Myers Halloween movie, even a weird latter one other than the third one, it's just a jangly guy. Because 90% of horror movies are a big dude who can stab until he gets stabbed 6 times to still survive, or a jangly thing, a small girl, or a puppet, something you don't expect to be able to kill.
Do you know how Freddy vs. Jason was originally supposed to end?
An orgy?
They were both going to get dragged down hell and keep fighting, and then Chains would come out, and then Pinhead would show up and go, "Now, gentlemen, what's the problem here?"
Oh, God.
I'm just saying, they considered doing that.
As long as the
they
devil...
They considered a lot of bad things.
Yeah, that's right. You know, at one point, we even thought of nominating Donald Trump to be the president.
God damn it.
Yeah, exactly.
This movie was tremendous. There was so much blood and leather. There was so much blood and leather. I've never seen so much blood and leather ever.
He fast forwards to the Lifetime parts just to see Julia hit people with hammers.
Well, I mean, I was
don't give me ideas, Daniel. I don't already have enough to do.
The only thing I was going to say was it would work if the devil was a legend. Was Tim Curry playing that devil?
He does put Mia Sara in a leather outfit at one point, so that might kind of work.
I have such beautiful Saras to show you. Anyway, here's the thing. We've done it. We've talked about it. For me, this is the worst of the bunch, but I think half of us want to hate Friday the 13th the most. But we can agree Nightmare on Elm Street was the best of the bunch.
Objectively, yes.
But that being said, by this point when you're listening to this, the action movie bracket is wrapping up. Whoever you choose to win the bracket is going to have their whole month in November. We don't know who it's going to be, so I can't even plug it. But follow us on Twitter and on Facebook to get the polls. I mean, obviously, Letterboxd, we have our Letterboxd going where I'll review the movie. Danny Boy's on there and Matt's on there. They'll review the movie too. Matt's going to rewrite the script for us.
Already did.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
Check out my newsletter.
Just Google O.J. Simpson, how I would have done it, comma Matt Quinn. And Hellraiser is going to come up because, you know, it's going to be a knife and a black guy and whatever. However, if you're not following us on Twitter, you can't be voting. Or Facebook, you can't be voting. I have the whole challenge bracket up. We started with 80 people. We're down to just a few. It's going to be a whole month of action in November, which is what we need. Because after eating that much heavy food on Thanksgiving, I'm going to need a little action to get me up at night.
Special shout out to Michael Dudikoff,
who not only participated, was resurrected, and then lost to Uma Thurman.
Dude, I love you, sir. You were awesome.
We're going to throw in an American Ninja movie somewhere along just so we can watch you kick some ass.
Oh, but yeah.
Thanks for participating with us on Twitter. Thanks for voting for Danny Trejo, even though it was against your best interest, because, I mean, Machete, right?
What a man.
Danny Trejo. Michael Dudikoff voted against his best interest and then told Daniel and I about it. So, you know what? Good on you, buddy. But you're right. Danny Trejo is amazing. So, thanks for participating. Thanks for voting. Thanks for following us. And thanks for listening for an extra 3 minutes while we, you know, kissed our own ass. Four white guys with brown hair just sitting around a microphone and talking about how great we are. So stay tuned in 2 weeks and every future 2 weeks in November as we talk about some ass-kicking action and we put a little bit of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Where Between Your Childhood is a product of Doolittle Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. Produced by Nick Hoffman, Daniel Suttis, and Matthew Quinn, and edited by Daniel Suttis. Our theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from incomptech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons License by Attribution 3.0 License.